Hey, this is Will Wheaton. You're listening to Radio Brendo Man.
Welcome to another episode of Radio Brendo Man. I'm Brendan Creasy.
And I'm Phil Vecchio.
And we have a special guest with us, a return guest. First return guest. Derek.
True.
Mr. James Riley is here.
Hello. Thank you for
Thank
having me.
Thank you for joining us again.
Yeah, thanks for coming back. We're very excited.
Oh, no, I had a great time the first time, so this is great.
That's good. We didn't scare you off or anything?
Not at all. We can talk to Legos and Disney again.
Okay, we could go on that all day. I got a new Lego set on vacation.
What'd you get?
Well, I went to the GameStop out there, and the guy had a little Jurassic Park Lego.
Oh, the Raptor one?
And it was supposed to be if you pre-order it.
Yeah, because Mark got one.
Yeah. I didn't pre-order the game, but I admired it, and he's like, oh, you know what? Here, you can just have one. And he gave it to me.
That's awesome.
Wow. Yeah.
Who knew somebody at GameStop would actually give
In Idaho.
Oh, in Idaho. So it was Idaho GameStop.
Idaho GameStop. There you go.
That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, did you get the game?
No, I didn't.
The game looks amazing.
It does look really fun.
You go through every movie.
I know. Have you seen Jurassic Park yet, James?
No.
We haven't either.
It doesn't need my help, and it doesn't need your guys' help either, apparently. But
that's true.
But
I do want to see dinosaurs eating stuff.
Yeah, me too. It looks great. And so does... I haven't seen Inside Out yet either. Sorry.
Ooh.
Oh, Phil saw that.
It was amazing.
Yeah?
I liked it a lot.
Sad?
No, I think it was really uplifting.
Good.
Honestly.
That's what I've heard, but I also heard if you're going through stuff, it might be difficult.
It tugs on the feels occasionally, definitely, but, overall, I think it was an uplifting message.
It's a Pixar movie. It's going to tug on you.
Yeah, it's exactly what you'd expect from that.
It's the first Pixar movie in a long time, I think, ever to not be number one because Jurassic World. Juggernaut.
But all of that aside,
yeah.
We have James Riley here.
We have James Riley here.
Talk about what we're here to talk about.
You was it in January?
When did
you released your newest book? And
you've completed
your Half Upon a Time series, or
yes.
I mean, I guess for now.
There are sort of no plans to keep going, but I keep getting questions about that. So it's really a great compliment. People keep wanting to see what's gonna happen. Kind of as far as I'm concerned, it's already happened. I just don't have any idea for a story right now, but you never know.
Could happen. Yeah. All right. So we'll throw our pitcher ideas at you throughout the show then.
Let's do it.
And now you have your new series called Story Thieves, which Phil and I actually got to attend you did a signing out here.
Yeah.
In the Inland Empire of all places.
Yeah.
I had a friend at that Barnes & Noble. I'd done some school visits with her mother. Her mother is a teacher out there, so I kind of met them through a couple different events. And so when I got to go on my first tour, which was awesome, I asked to go to her store specifically. Plus, she liked my book, so, it was nice.
Oh, that's good. That helps.
Yeah, but it was really cool to meet you guys. The tour was kind of beyond... I was going with Brandon Mall, who wrote Fable Haven and all these other amazing books, Beyonders and... Five Kingdoms is his new series. So it's really nice going around with somebody who actually has fans. So you're never
there
sitting there.
There were a ton of people there.
So that was one of the benefits of going to my friend's store because she had been recommending my books. So that's
right.
That was key.
Did you have a pretty good turnout elsewhere though as well?
Yeah, it was always kind of surprising. Like I usually am sitting in front of my computer thinking that no one's reading these books. And then every so often you hear from somebody or you go to a store and I don't know. I love hearing from friends where they happen to see somebody buy it or something like that. And they're like, you really are a writer.
Yeah. There's nothing more. I mean, that's got to validate you a little bit going around the country. I mean, to different places and random people are wanting to meet you and get you to sign their book and they're saying all these things. And
just having anyone having read it is still amazing to me, any of the books. And so if somebody asks me a question about something in the plot, my eyes go wide and I'm like, you know it too? Oh, crazy. And then they ask me, like, what color somebody's eyes are, and I have no idea. And so I feel like...
if you answer, then it's canon, so...
Yeah, I know. I'm terrified of doing there. That on my website.
I follow you on Goodreads, and you get, like, some of, like, very, very specific questions very on there.
Somebody just asked me about how Owen gets, like, a little input device into his neck. And I literally just answered this. They're like, so wouldn't people see that? And I'm like, well, the skin kind of closes over it when it's not in use. And it kind of just looks like a wrinkle. It's one of those things that I'm like, uh-oh. Would people see that? No, of course not. And then it's all thought out.
Yeah.
And then since you do have younger folk, you got a lot of shippers out there.
Yes, which is...
For various
very
relationships.
Weird. Yeah. It's because the characters are pretty young. I think we talked about this last time, how... Like, middle grade has to be, like, 12-year-olds or under. That's sort of a requirement of some bookstores. So there's really not supposed to be a whole lot of romance. So to have people shipping different people, it's kind of... Yeah.
Kind of an awkward...
Slightly. But it's...
Speaking of the age thing, what did you think when you saw, like, the two, like, adult dudes? Because we didn't tell you we were coming to the signing.
No. But
Will was very concerned.
There's a lot of kids there, and then there's these two big dudes in the back of the line. Like, was that weird at all, or is that cool?
That was exactly what it was like at other places. Like, there were, but mostly for Brandon, because there would be all these people who had, like, grown up reading his books, and he's been writing for, like, 10 years or whatever. So he'd have all these fans that just be like, I read your book in like, high school, and I still, and they would be shaking, and it just, and he'd be really cool to him. It was basically just, and I'm a huge fan of his, too, so, like, when I got to just go to dinner and, like, pick his brain about stuff, it was a lot of fun.
That's cool.
So, yeah, it, not weird at all. I mean, I would have gone. I would have gone to Brandon's thing.
Sure, yeah.
I wouldn't have gone to
him. Right, I mean, it was close to us, so, you know.
Oh, that was perfect. Why not? I had no idea. I wouldn't have gone to my thing. I would have gone to Brandon's thing. I know me.
Well, you know me.
And now, this new book, it's quite... I mean, Phil and I both read it. We bought it, and then we read it, and...
Thank you.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. Oh, thanks. It's really, really good.
And it's the most... It's one of the most meta things I've ever read. And just the directions you can go in seem limitless at this point. So, like, how do you go about planning something like this? How do you go about... Like,
do
how
you
does
have
this
a plan
happen
from here on out?
So, the idea, like, in case people haven't, like, heard about it, it's basically, or I don't know if you guys have been talking about it all, but...
We've been pushing
it.
Yeah,
oh, nice. You can refresh their memories, though.
That's
feel free.
So, basically, it's kind of a wish fulfillment thing for me. It's about a boy who discovers a friend of his, a classmate, who can jump in and out of books. So, he convinces her by lying to take him into his favorite book series, and then he gets to eventually live out kind of the life of his hero. And that's total wish fulfillment. So that's kind of, and I think I probably went over this so many times on the tour too, so you guys have probably already heard this, but it's what I wanted to do as a kid. I read all the time when I was a kid, and I just, you live in those worlds. You feel like they're real. So the idea that they are real out there is both not really surprising and also like the greatest thing that you can possibly imagine sometimes. Especially if there's some sort of doorway or a Narnia cabinet. Sorry, a wardrobe. Wow. anything like that. An Alice in Wonderland mirror. Anything that will get you over there seems like the greatest device I could possibly think of. So there is a plan after all that. All
right.
So far, I'm planning on 5 books. I have a story that will be told in about that many books. If it goes to like 6 or if it goes to 4, it wouldn't terribly surprise me. Just because things might shift as I go. But that's kind of the plan, and I know what's going to happen in each story. What I didn't plan on is I did plan on each book being like a separate genre. So the second book is a mystery. I had no idea how hard that would be to write.
Whoa.
I have never written a mystery before, and it broke my brain all over the place.
So is the second one done?
Yeah, the second one's completely done. They're actually, they're just printing review copies right now. So I'm actually working on the third book. Which means I remember nothing about the first book at this point. but it's just kind of funny how publishing takes like a year, so I'm always way far out, and people ask questions about the first book, and I'm like, but you found out what happened in book two, right? So you know that's not even a question. No. So the second book is a mystery. It involves the great, 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 great grandson of Sherlock Holmes, and his potential greatest enemy, because it sort of makes sense if you think about Bethany's looking for a missing person that they would need a detective.
Right.
But there are a bunch of weird, fun things that ended up happening in the book. The first 10 pages are all redacted. They're all like marked out, bolded over, kind of like a top secret document. And when you get to that's the first 9 chapters. When you get to the 10th chapter, you find out that Owen and Kiel don't remember anything from what just happened or what happened in those first chapters. So the book's called The Stolen Chapters.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome. Oh, wow.
But when I was writing the book, I just kind of, you'll eventually find out what happens in each chapter, but I didn't know I was going to do the redacted thing. I thought there were a bunch of different ways we could do it, and then that happened, and I got to like set up a few words that stood out, and it was just the coolest thing. I don't know. So that kind of thing, like, I had no plan for, and it just sort of happened, which was great, because the rest of the book just took forever. So when little gifts come to you, it's kind of nice. But, yeah, there was that. I wrote another scene that I don't really want to spoil, but they go into a certain kind of book that would require them to change their form a little bit. And my editor was like, oh, maybe we can get that drawn out. And I'm like, what? We could get illustrations in a book?
They do that?
I know, but just to have that idea that somebody would actually draw my things officially and have them, you'll see, it will make sense what I'm talking about, but
I got some ideas.
I love when books play with the actual media of the book, like when it's in, you know, it's physically interactive, or you see,
yeah,
I don't know, I don't know how to explain it, but that kind of idea,
yeah, where, like Winnie the Pooh kind of super cool, climbing up the words in the movie when they...
Exactly.
Or you have like, there's an author named Jasper Ford who will use footnotes as like somebody else talking to somebody in the book, which...
Oh, we're huge fans. I mean, I have a copy of it right here. Are you familiar with the J.J. Abrams S?
Yes.
Phil and I got really into that. And before that, I mean, I read on the podcast, Phil hasn't read it, but I read House of Leaves.
Yeah, that's amazing,
which
too.
Which is, like, the ultimate, like, crazy... Like, I actually had to switch to ebook for a little bit, and I'm like, this just doesn't... It's not working for me, so I went back and got the book again. Because it's the whole experience, you know?
Yeah.
I love that idea. Like, the J.J. Abrams book is so... I ended up buying 2 just so I could have one with all the stuff in case I lost any of it, like, just reading it. Which is anal and crazy and OCD, but like that's
the kind of thing I would do. I get it,
but it's just, I don't know. I love that feeling that you're playing with something, like it's a physical story that you're holding in some way, and like they're playing with the format of the book. One of the ideas that I hadn't planned on was actually a choose your own adventure where the characters don't want to do what you're telling them to. For story thieves, and I never planned on that, and the idea came to me. I was originally going to do a time travel book, that kind of thing for book 4, and now I'm like, I could do a choose your own adventure where they push back.
That would be really cool.
And where you go to the page and they're like, I'm not doing this.
They refuse to do it, and you have to go. I don't know how it would work, and I'm going to break my brain doing that.
Go back
too.
To page 30. Like, that's it. Like, just go back to this page. And then you try to, I was thinking about that. That's a lot of, or like, yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
Bethany,
I think you could figure it out. You did stuff in this book that I just, was blowing my mind. And then one thing I wanted to ask you about is you reference a lot of like real books, some of which I knew were in the public domain, but other ones, like, do you have to get permission?
How does that work?
So the way I've always, I hope to God I'm interpreting correctly, is that you can mention them, and you can mention characters because they exist, and you can talk about things. Like, you can say Batman is a character published by DC Comics. If Batman shows up, you start to get in trouble. So, like, I couldn't have Harry Potter appear in the books in any way, but I could sort of talk about, I would really love to jump into Hogwarts, or jump into Harry Potter or something like that and meet Ron and everybody. So, the books where they're actually going to jump in, just assume that any non-public domain book they're going into between the books.
Gotcha.
Because so that's kind of the dream too, is to find an author who'd be willing to do that. And I sort of actually talked to Brandon, and he thought it'd be a lot of fun to have them jump into Fablehaven. We were sort of going back and forth where he would maybe write his characters and I would write mine, and we'd have a fun little thing. I don't know. I probably shouldn't have been mentioning that. But I think that's going to be something we try to do just because we both kind of see it as fun. Like,
yeah.
The legal stuff is all annoying and that would have to be worked out by somebody else. But, like, for us, it would just be like, that sounds so cool.
Oh, totally. Now, you kind of briefly mentioned your own first trilogy.
I know.
But they don't, like, go there. Is this going to happen? We kind of asked you last time, but...
Yeah, I'm actually supposed
to be... Are you going to pull, like, a half magic here where you're, like, they go... Because when, like, in one of the half magic books, they go back into, like...
To the first book.
To the first book. Something like that.
See, I thought about that, and I'm not going to say that. There's a copy of Story Thieves 1 on the cover of Story Thieves 2. Have you seen it? So I'm not going to go into whether you go back in your own book, but... There's a reason it's on there. It definitely, yeah.
Okay.
And then the other book cover on that cover is Sherlock Holmes kind of silhouette.
Nice.
Okay. So both of those will play a large part. But anyway, Half Upon a Time, I think it'd be a lot of fun. I think the plan right now is to do kind of a short story, maybe on my website or something, just kind of like between books.
Nice.
Because I sort of... I can't get into why it's a slightly weird thing right now until you read the second book.
Okay.
But there are some slightly weird parts about why I wouldn't want the characters going into Half Upon a Time officially in the book series. It has something to do with me being the author, and so you'll see.
Oh.
Yeah, gotcha. Because that's the other thing. I figure you've also kind of hinted at the fact that, like, you've inserted yourself as a character. You pulled a Stephen King in Dark Tower. You are doing this.
Like, it's so arrogant. Not Stephen King, but it's so narcissistic.
I don't know. That was pretty arrogant.
this is entirely... You'll see why this is happening. And to me, it's more like, this would be so funny. Instead of, like... Because I will consistently make fun of myself any chance I get. Like, oh, God. When I mentioned Half Upon a Time in Story Thieves originally, it was so much worse. It was just, like, the librarian just bagged on me consistently for, like, 2 pages. My editor's like, you can't do this. You're one of our authors. Like, that would make us embarrassed for you.
We want to sell those books still, right?
You can't just sit there and talk about how terrible Half Upon a Time is. That would just be the joke. But anyway, I do sort of hint at it in the biography, and it's definitely going to take a weird turn in Story Thieves 2. So I won't say much more, but it's incredibly arrogant. But it's fun. The whole point is that I feel like it will hopefully be fun because if you're writing a book and you're in the book and kind of the world that I've set up where you don't know if authors have control over the characters or not, if they're just sort of seeing them in their brain like DC Comics mm-hmm. did with the original Flash. Did you ever read those?
No,
but I'm aware. When I got really in, because I was like obsessed with the Dark Tower, so then I'm like, has this happened before? Like, what else does this stuff? So I started going like internet deep dives, and I found out about all these other meta events that occurred in fiction, and I got really into it.
It's so much fun.
It is. It's a lot of fun.
So yeah, the Barry Allen Flash, when he first showed up, he had been reading the comics of the original Flash, and then eventually they met. But like, and then Grant Morrison, who's a comic book writer, if you don't know him, has done a lot with that too.
He's really amazing when it comes to, that stuff.
So he does this. He just did this thing called Multiversity, where it had all these different universes all together, and they were aware of each other because they read each other's comics. And so it would be like, it was kind of like a conga line of one universe read the other's comics, and then that one read another one, and it's. I mean, that's not what I'm doing, but I like setting that up. Like, do authors in the non-fictional world write these? Do they control the fictional people? Or is it more like they're getting it in their imagination somehow? It's like they're watching almost a TV program in some way. So I like to leave that question open until, you know, I have to answer it. So
I like that you did that. I like that you didn't clearly, especially in this book, because it does deal with these hard questions. Like, you all, like, at first you're like, oh, this is the bad guy and this is the good guy. But then the bad guy is like, when he's giving his big, like, soliloquies about, like, you know, we are people.
Yeah.
And then you kind of like, wait, this guy's kind of, he's right. And like, right. It kind of does a lot of, you kind of twist that around a lot. I really like that.
Thank you. I was a little nervous, honestly, because, like, it does make him seem like why would you fight this? I mean, he goes too far with it, but it's...
Yeah.
He's got a lot of good points. Like, if you felt like you were being controlled, if you were in some way under the control of somebody else, you'd want to break out of that. You'd want them to stop. That's what freedom's all about. You're not supposed to be under somebody else's control. And so for Bethany to kind of be fighting him against that, I was like, I hope I'm not just making her like a complete jerk. I don't know. But I tried to set it up so that it, the question was there, and whether he definitely was taking it too far. And there was any control that authors have would sort of be, subconscious anyway. Like, they wouldn't know that they were actually writing about real people theoretically.
Right.
Unless people do. Dun, dun, dun. Sorry.
Well, anytime a middle grade book like makes you start thinking about free will and stuff, I think you've done your job well.
They all should. It should all be about, I don't know,
getting big concepts like out there. I don't know. It's really cool. I love thinking when I'm reading a book about, you know, like a kid's book. It's perfect.
Thank you. It just seems like so much fun to me. And then it brings up kind of the question of, are we doing the same thing? Like, if you don't want to make it religious, which is not really how I intended it anyway, but I mean, there are so many parallels there. But you can also go into, like, it's kind of a Matrix thing. How far are we down that rabbit hole? Are we the story in somebody else's anything? It's just, they're fun ideas to think about whether or not you take them seriously. And to do, just to play with that and play with the idea of author versus work and like how much control you have, how little control you have. And you always hear about people talking about characters speaking to them in their heads and characters become real. And I've said this too, like they don't do what you want them to do all the time because they've become too concrete in your head. They've taken on their characteristics. How much does that, how much fun would that be to play with? As if they're actually real somewhere. So yeah. Either that or I'm getting myself in a ton of trouble. And this book is going to get seriously get really dark.
One of the things I did notice, again, while I was reading this, was, like, there is a lot of different stuff going on. Characters are all over the place. There's, like, different dimensions. You got people in books. You got people out of books. You got this other thing going on. How do you keep track of all that? I mean, are you just taking, like, copious notes? Do you have, like, the master notebook somewhere? Like, how are you keeping all this straight in your head?
I wish it was all that organized. Like, I have so many documents on my computer and folders. That's just like,
sounds maybe, like us.
It's like a line and that's it. It would be something I thought of as I was falling asleep and I emailed to myself and it makes no sense out of context, but I just have, so I do kind of go over the stories over and over. And then like for book two, I had a very set story in mind and then I completely threw it out and started over and just, it just said somebody joined the call.
Oh, sorry. I think we, something.
Okay.
Oh, are you still there?
Bugged out a little bit on ours. We're good. We're good.
Yeah. Just keep it rolling. You think?
Yeah. Something bugged out there.
Sorry.
I don't know what that was.
So I do kind of like to come up with big outlines, especially when I was writing a mystery, because I figured that was something I had to have very, very set in my mind. So I did write many outlines and I actually just wrote, I ended up writing, a summary for every single chapter of that book, which seemed like a lot of extra work, but it turned out it was because I threw them all away. but it did help and it did kind of give me an impression of like where the story was going to go. And that was one of those things that I had a lot of trouble with a mystery in particular, because so much of it is sort of formalized. And I ended up kind of, throwing all those rules out sort of, but you have to sort of, you have to take them into account. And
like, how does that work when you're writing mystery? Because you don't want to give away too much, but you want the reader to follow along. So you want to give them little crumbs, but you don't want to give them, you know, so how do you do that?
I cheated massively because of the way my books work. I both had the chapters missing and then I presented them as flashbacks that the characters knew were flashbacks. So Owen will remember a chapter in his head and think of it as, I just had a flashback. This is the point in this story where I'm having a flashback. Why is that happening? Why am I getting flashbacks anyway? So it's, I get to play with that a little more just because of the nature of the book, and kind of just enjoy myself with that. So I got to kind of meet out, or I don't know what the word, but I gave hints every so often about what had happened to get them to this point. because they start basically in the middle of the story and they're given a countdown to something that's going to happen that's very bad. And it turns out that, yeah, I don't write simple books, apparently. And but hopefully this one will at least feel a little more, I don't know. It doesn't split up as much as the last book did. Like, you will still see Bethany and Owen and Kiel in different chapters to some extent, but the characters are together a little bit more, and they have a common goal a little bit more in this one. So you do see what happened before the mystery started, and you get to see how it ends, certainly. Yeah, this one has a bit of a cliffhanger at the end, but hopefully it's not so bad. Oh. It's not as bad as, like, Twice Upon a Time's cliffhanger.
Seriously, then we have to, like, wait another year for this to happen.
I know, and I have to write the book, and that's a pain.
And you've got just kids harassing you on Goodreads.
I tried to write this first one to not have that kind of crazy cliffhanger ending. Like, Half Upon a Time had a bit of one, yeah, where it's like, we're going to go off and keep adventuring and look for May's parents, and then Twice...
This one seemed pretty self-contained, yeah, for the most part.
I tried to do that purposely. Like, I left it open, like, we're going to have some adventures, but it wasn't like something neat. You know something's about to happen, and then I pull the rug out from under you.
Kind of right, thing.
Right. Because that, it is kind of mean, but also, like, I didn't realize how many people, like, wanted to read a self-contained book, because I love series, and I love kind of cliffhangers, and I love the idea that it just gets you so excited for when the next book comes out, because you've been waiting for a year. I mean, it's cruel, but it's you know, it's cruel for a good reason, which is you're really excited.
Yeah. Having lived through Harry Potter, which Phil didn't, but going through that, I mean, that was part of the excitement for me, was like, oh, man, and then like, the wait, yes, it was kind of horrible, but it was also just all the speculation in between and all the, like, conversations and just that. And then, like, just that when a release date would be announced. Like, I remember when Book 5 came out, and it was just like, ah, like, or, like, between Book 5 and 6, just all those, especially once the series really got going.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I mean, that was huge. And but also, like, I mean, I'm a huge Stephen King fan, so I grew up with The Dark Tower. Those waits were crazy and horrible, but it's still, like, that was part of the excitement for me, was, like, I know this is going to end on some kind of, like, cliffhanger, and that's part of the excitement. I think you're totally right about that. But Some people want to wait, and they want to binge watch everything because they can't handle that.
Can't take it.
Yeah, and I'm the same way, like, that for shows, certainly. But, like, I felt like I could sort of do that, the best of both worlds with this one. Mm-hmm. I made the first one a little more self-contained. The second one will definitely still be very self-contained, and then I have, like, a two-page epilogue that's just like, oh, by the way, here's a cliffhanger. but, like, if you didn't read that epilogue, it would be a complete book. And so I know that sounds kind of cruel, but it, the way the book ends, it could totally be the end of the series. And I was like, are people going to realize that this keeps going? So, you'll see what I mean, but I wanted to make sure that there wasn't any kind of doubt that things were not quite over. So yeah, it's, but I, like you said, it's just like, if you're not George R. R. Martin and you're not making people wait for 15 years between books, it's, and you know that it's going to be out next year, it's kind of fun. And especially when you come in and, like, four or five of the books are out, and you're like, you can binge, and you get the cliffhanger, and you're like, I need to read the next one. It's such a great, it's the half Blood Prince thing where Dumbledore dies.
Yeah.
He dies? I haven't read these yet.
Oh.
I haven't read them yet.
Are you serious?
I read the first
Harry Potter book.
He doesn't.
And I saw the first movie.
He doesn't die.
That's as far as I got.
He doesn't die.
Okay, we're gonna read it on our book club coming up here in a little while. So I'll get to it.
It's not a bad series.
I don't know. Yeah.
Speaking of book club things, real quick, let me ask. I want to ask your opinion on this, because I discovered there's a controversy.
Okay.
This doesn't really have anything to do with James Riley's books, but you're familiar with the Super Fudge series, correct?
Oh, wow. I haven't read them since I was a kid, but I loved them.
Okay. Well, apparently, I think a lot of... So on Goodreads...
That's what the series we're currently reading right now.
The series we're reading in our book club.
That's why you mentioned
that. And on Goodreads, they list, otherwise known as Sheila the Great, as book 2 in the series.
Right.
Except the Fudge, the Hatchers aren't even in that book. It's a side book.
It's a side book.
But because it's in the Goodreads chronology, people are like, no. And I'm like, that is arbitrary. That is just somebody.
So do you count those side stories as part of the main series? I think it's separate.
I don't know.
That's a fascinating question. And I would say no. Unless, so.
We're ruling on the no side.
Yeah.
So having read a ton of comics where you, like, there was just a recent, like, crossover between all of the Marvel Universe and, like, it was...
The Secret Wars thing is going on right now.
And so, Jonathan Hickman, who writes a lot of the Avengers comics, he wrote a thing right before that called Infinity. So you had the Infinity series, but you couldn't actually read that unless you're reading his comics too, which were ostensibly tie-ins, but were basically part of the same story. And you literally didn't get the whole story unless you were reading them. There's that kind of tie-in, and then you have, like, like a spin-off, almost.
What Sheila the Great is, because it seriously just takes a character and she has her totally own independent story. Right. Like, as we compared him to go into Beverly Cleary, we compared him to, like, the Henry Huggins books.
Right.
Like, those are not Ramona books. Henry Huggins does appear.
Right, and Ramona appears in those.
And then, like, there is some crossover, but those...
Separate.
They're separate. Are separate books.
Totally, agree.
But again... I think the whole, because I got there's some serious, like, again, on Goodreads.
On Goodreads of all places.
There's a lot of controversy, and it's simply because somebody put, when they initially put in the books, they put it as number two. But I'm like, so I'm tempted, because anybody can edit those, I'm tempted to delete it.
You're going in.
I might do it.
Okay, so here's a related question then.
I just was thinking about that.
Because I know, James, you've read the Narnia books.
Mm.
Which order do you go?
Oh.
Do you go the original published order, or do you go... I might have even asked him this last time. I don't know. But if I did, repeat question.
I have a hard time. I got to go published order, but that's only because... I don't know.
I have a hard time with the new order.
Yeah.
It's just,
although the New Order is chronological,
and I like the band New Order, so unrelated. But
it's just, but I don't know.
The published order was the order for so long,
exactly,
like years and years and years.
It's the same.
So that's the one I prefer.
It's the Star Wars question. Like, how do you watch the Star Wars movies now if you're showing them to somebody who's never seen them?
Well, didn't Lloyd Alexander do that too? Like, those books kind of go a little bit off. They're not chronological.
Yeah, but I think they've... I don't know. I've never heard someone read them out of order.
Yeah. I haven't heard of any kind of argument to have them. Have you guys read those in your book club?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. Those are some of my all-time favorites.
Wait, we didn't read the Prydain series. We read...
Yeah, we did.
Oh, we did.
That was like the first one we did.
I don't remember reading those.
It was like 4 years ago.
I didn't read the Black Cauldron. We just read the first one. We read the one that we read the Foundling.
No, we read it all.
Nope.
Look in the book club. Go back there.
It's I know I didn't read those again.
They're great. It should be read all the time.
I mean, I read them when I was a kid, but yeah, they're great. And it's unfortunate that what happened with the Black Cauldron adaptation, because somebody at Disney wanted to make
the whole series.
That whole series, and that somehow that got ruined.
That would have been so...
Unfortunately, even though I think as a technologically, like, animation-wise, Black Cauldron is amazing.
Yeah.
But the fact that they try to condense all the stories into one thing, it's kind of a mess.
It's, yeah.
I don't know. What are your thoughts on the Black Cauldron movie?
It took me forever to actually see it, because I didn't see it when it came out. I played...
Oh, yeah, and if you didn't, it was... They basically disowned it.
Yeah, exactly. I played the video game, which was, like, an Apple II.
Oh, yeah, that was... Was it Sierra did that?
Yeah, it was like a King's Quest kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I love the book so much that I was so desperate to see the movie, and then when I finally did, it was just so...
Ooh, that would have been a huge letdown.
Yes. It was such a letdown. But it was...
Because I saw the movie, and I was like, this is okay. And then my friend had the books.
Oh,
and so I did it the right way, I guess. And I was like, oh, these books are really good, and they really messed up...
Every
movie.
Whenever I'd go to schools and they always ask me, like, what my favorite book is, and I'm assuming, like, I'm not going to, like, start into, like, Nick Hornby or something with the kids, but I always bring up the Black Cauldron series, or I usually say the Book of Three, and I was like, it's about an assistant pig keeper and his pig can figure out the future. It's like, that's the greatest plot of any series you could ever want. And honestly, like, Terran Wanderer is maybe one of my all-time favorite books just by itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I desperately wanted to do that I mean, it was funny that you guys brought up the spin-off question, because I've been pitching my publisher on maybe doing that for something in Story Thieves. Actually, two different things. There's a... I could do a Terran Wanderer kind of book, and that's, like, my all-time fantasy to be able to write a book that sounds really, really boring, but it's just somebody, like, figuring out who they are in their life.
And so great.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that book.
And then I also had an idea. I originally was going to write a series about the great-great-great-grandson of Sherlock Holmes and the great-great-great-granddaughter of Professor Moriarty. and I ended up using them in my second book instead. But I would still love to do a spin-off series from that, because I think that would be a ton of fun.
That'd be really cool.
You don't get enough spin-off series or crossovers.
Yeah.
See?
And they're great. Just the idea of worlds merging is always like, and you never know what's going to happen because of it. And I think that's part of,
oh yeah.
And it's just it's the ultimate fan thing. And I don't know. I love it. That's why, again, like, I feel that's where these Marvel movies is getting more and more like just crazy for me.
Oh yeah. Like, the longer they go and just the more everything comes together, it's just going to...
Yeah, like the comics. And that's where when I hear people online going, it's too much, I'm like, this is what we've been waiting for our entire lives. You need to stop this. Stop talking. Put that talk away, or they're listening. Like, stop.
I think they're making some money. It's okay.
Because Civil War is going to be insane.
It will be.
Civil War is going to be nuts. Infinity Gauntlet's going to be crazy. Like, when just everybody's in there...
It's great.
The more I think about it, I'm just really excited. I'm sorry.
But so I would like you said, I want to see a Chronicles of Prydain series made. So the next question for James then I have is, are we going to see a movie of any of your books?
He gets asked this all the time.
I know you do, but you know,
I got
to get the update on the question.
So I literally just got asked on Twitter if here, I won't read it because that's rude, but it's somebody said they're going into fifth grade and they had been reading my books. Can they make a movie of my books? And I didn't know how to answer that necessarily, because I'm like, am I giving away my rights if I say yes? I
mean, just tell them go to film school.
You should do what Stephen King does. Stephen King actually does a really cool thing for student movies.
Okay.
It's called Dollar Babies. If you look it up, Stephen King Dollar Babies, there's like a whole series of short films. It's mostly shorts, but people have made feature, like Frank Darabont got his start making a Stephen King like Dollar Baby
movie.
Seriously?
That's awesome.
Not even joking.
How does that work?
So what he has a policy in place where he will sell you the rights to any of his short stories. It has to be a short story for $1. You can non-commercial, no commercial use. And all he asks in return is a copy of the movie.
Oh my god. That's so
amazing.
And
he's had that in place his entire... And people have made some amazing...
So
and like
more
kids,
than one person
like,
buy the rights of the same
Yeah,
story.
More than one... Okay. People... Like, you don't get exclusive,
rights.
But like people have made... And like kids, like high school kids, junior high kids. And again, Frank Darabont, that was one of his first things he ever did, was he made a... Stephen King, because he'll give you the rights, and you can take it to festivals.
You just can't make money.
You just can't make money off of it.
That's amazing.
Huh? Yeah.
All right, I'm going to ask this girl to take it to festivals, and she can have the non-exclusive, like, North American rights.
That's cool. Then you just put it up on your YouTube channel.
I'm telling you. Like, that's a thing.
Oh, yeah.
But I just thought that was really cool, because I'm sure you get asked that all the time, and kids... You can't, because you handle it pretty well, but, like, kids don't understand that, like, it's not just as simple as, like, all right, we're going to make a movie of this, and there's a movie, and...
Yeah, and it's always...
I mean, I wish it were that easy, because I'm sure, but...
It is kind of, like, you see the disappointment in their eyes when you're like, no, it costs a ton of money, and I don't have that, and they do kind of see you as the person to make the decision, because your name is on the book, why aren't you making a movie? Like, I'm blaming you for this. that's the part I always hate when I'm answering questions, when they're asking things that kind of reveal the reality of being a writer in some ways, at least a novelist, as opposed to like a screenwriter, maybe, though maybe that's not that different. Just kind of the practical level that is a little disappointing in some ways from when you're dreaming about writing. And I want to answer these kids' questions so that it's like still inspiring to them and it still encourages them to follow their dream if that's what they want. I want to be like, well, you know, writing makes very little money and the market is glutted. And if you have a vampire story, just stop right now. I mean, just, you don't want to like, right. You don't want to just kill their dreams. So, but
right. At
times they'll ask really hard questions like that. And the movie one is actually a little easy because I can just blame it on studios. And there always is sort of the possibility. So I always kind of leave it open and like, oh, you know, I would love to see it. There's nothing happening right now. Which is the answer to your question, too. There's nothing happening right now. But it'd be really fun to see. I would love to see... Somebody took Story Thieves out to various studios, and some of the studios that they took them to, I would go crazy to see a movie done. I mean, it's just... So, if nothing else, I get to daydream about it, as does everybody, I suppose, if you want to. It's kind of like you buy a lottery ticket, and you get to daydream about winning the lottery for a night.
What you do with it.
Yeah. So that's kind of how I see this. Like, anytime I hear that it's going out to a studio, I'm like, oh, that would be really cool. And then, oh, nothing happens to it. But you never know.
Well, it would make an amazing movie. I'm just saying, I can only imagine what you could do with the genre when you're, like, in a visual format as well. I think there could be some cool
You would
stuff.
Be probably, one of the things you'd be doing is you'd be doing what Last Action Hero
yes.
tried to do, but yeah. kind of dropped the ball doing. I think, because... Speaking of, sorry, I go off on tangents all the time, but
no.
I think that's a lot. Like, Last Action Hero as an idea is an amazing, amazing idea. But it's just the execution of it. For some people, they kind of drop the ball because instead of... Because when he's looking at that newspaper, and he can... When the bad guy is looking at that newspaper, like, he can bring in any movie villain in the world, and then he picks the other bad guy from one of the fictional movies. You're like, and obviously you know why they did that, but as a kid, when I saw that, like, he's looking at the coming attractions and he sees Dracula and all these other people, and I'm like, this is gonna be crazy. And then it's that just the other villain that we already saw.
Yeah.
Like, and we don't get to see him go into any other movies. Like, the premise is so amazing, and then it didn't really deliver on that premise. I still like that movie, because I'm
it's
a sucker.
Fun, but...
I think it's fun, and it has the best sound. Like, if you're a rock and roll fan, it has an amazing soundtrack. And for the fact that movie even got made is crazy to me.
It does, but the cameos are all fun. Like, it was a good time, and, like, I watched that after I wrote Story Thieves again, because I kind of forgotten about it. I didn't write Story Thieves again. I watched it again after I wrote Story Thieves, and I was like, oh, this movie, I had completely forgotten, like, half the things, but it does seem like, yeah, I know what you mean. I'm a little disappointed that, like, as a studio, they couldn't be like, well, we have the rights to these other characters,
yeah,
this other movie.
That was the thing. I remember Harry Knowles, because he wrote it was like one of his most, the movies he was most disappointed with, was he even made a list of all the movies that they, because I think it was Warner Brothers.
Oh, wow.
Of all the things that Warner Brothers owned that they could have used.
Yeah.
And
I'm sure, like.
They didn't.
Yeah. They did have a lot of cameos, but I don't remember. I just watched it like a year or two ago, too, now.
Yeah, no, it didn't. Because, I mean, just the idea of going into other movies could have been.
Yeah,
pretty nuts. But I'm sure when you write again, like, this, we've been talking about this for a while. But the whole, you know, money, like, budgets and things like that. And when you're paying Arnold Schwarzenegger,
exactly.
however many millions of dollars, that's like a third of your budget right there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you only have so much to work with. And so I can't imagine, like, when you're talking about something, maybe because of that, like, because maybe a studio sees something like Story Thieves and is like, oh, this is expensive. I mean,
true. Yeah, and it's I was just thinking about that right now from like a standpoint of a publisher who is like, we have no money, so what, you know, if you found a different series to go into, you better hope to God that they're really into
they
it.
Own it.
Yeah, and they're willing to basically just cut out any cost.
Yeah,
that's. Are you familiar with Ready Player One?
Yes. And I'm really excited.
So
for
that movie, like, Steven Spielberg signed on.
Yeah,
that means they must be getting pretty far into the process, which I can't imagine what that process must be like getting. And that's where I'm like worried a little bit, like how much is going to be left in, because that's got to be like a lawyer's nightmare.
Oh, yeah.
Of like rights issues
or
and,
their dream, I guess.
And like, are they going to do like when, because there's whole scenes where they go into movies.
Yeah.
And like they're reliving movies and they're going into movie worlds. Like, I can't, that's going to be nuts.
I'm kind of wondering if that's like one of those like, is it a sample if it's not the if you're not showing the actual film from a movie, but if you are dressed up like the characters and sort of reciting the lines, is that more of like a sampling almost, like you do?
Yeah,
like
I don't
song
I don't even know how that works.
I'm sure that they, yeah, I mean,
but that must be that's probably why it's taken, because I mean, like, you think about like Randy Klein wrote that book, that was like 4, 5, 6 years ago. Sorry, Ernest Klein. Randy Klein is another friend of mine. I get a mix of Kleins. But yeah, Ernie wrote that a long time ago. And then, so this has just been like, and this movie hasn't even started production yet. So like that's, I think he sold the script as like before the book was even out. So like that tells you something about these kind of processes.
That's messy.
It's pretty nuts.
I'm super excited. And I guess if anyone could make it happen, Steven Spielberg is a good person to have.
That's why I was really happy that he was on board, because I'm like, if somebody's gonna get stuff done,
yeah,
like that gets the rights to these things, like it's gonna be him.
He can afford to just pay it out of pocket, right?
We'll see.
Doesn't he have Jurassic Park money?
I mean, yeah, he's got everything money. I mean, one of my favorite stats about Steven Spielberg is that he's on, he basically is on retainer at Universal Studios, and he gets paid like $10 million a year just for like ideas he has about rides.
Oh, that's the greatest job ever.
Yeah. Like, that's crazy.
I have ideas about rides all the time. Like, no one pays me. Like, man.
Like, just like, here, Steven, here's $10 million. What ideas do you have this year? I don't know. Maybe like that Fast and Furious thing's pretty cool. Like, let's do like a thing like that. Like, I mean, like, that's, and here's your $10 million, Steven. Like,
well, maybe we'll get him on Story Thieves then. Let's work on that.
I'm sure he's a huge...
At a Comic-Con panel.
Yeah, well, at our Comic-Con panel, we'll just be like, so, anybody know Steven Spielberg? Somebody in this room, maybe.
Yeah, I'm sure.
If you guys want to make that happen, that's cool. I mean, I won't say no.
We'll see what we can do.
Yeah.
Last year, we had, like, almost 100 people in the room listening to us, so maybe one of them.
You never know.
It's possible.
You never know.
Maybe he's there in disguise.
It's kind of how, like, I mean, that's how it works, right?
Yeah.
Just... one of the things I also wanted to ask you, you've referenced a lot of awesome young adult and children's books, and you've referenced some of our favorite. You're one of the only people I know that's mentioned the Great Brain series.
Yeah,
which we just read in our book club.
Phil introduced them to me.
Those books
books are amazing.
It's so weird to say that like a book about. Utah in the 1890s? When it's pretty early.
Yeah, like right around turn of the century, like
about Mormons and Catholics.
And it's just so, but it's so kind of, like they're talking about getting an indoor toilet, if I remember right. Like, I haven't read those books forever, but I love those books. And I kept trying to track them down because, like, most of them are out of print right now, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, it took a little eBaying for me to get copies.
Me too.
We had to do some finagling to get them.
But they're just so good. Like, if you, I used to read about editors who would kind of go out and find out of print books that they loved as kids, and then they would kind of arrange to, you know, rebuy the rights and get them back out. Like, if that ever happened, that would be high on my list, because I would love. Yeah. I just want people to read those again. They're so good.
Yeah, it's weird as we're going through some of these old books, like. Certain things have been difficult to find, like to the point where I had to borrow Phil's copies of Great Brain because the eBay ones were very expensive. Some of them we couldn't even find, a couple of them.
Well, I splurged a little and bought some copies for probably more than I should have, but...
And then totally worth the other books that are strangely hard to find are the original run of some of
Gordon Corman's
books.
You know Gordon Corman?
No, I haven't heard his name.
Oh, there's some books you should read there.
Okay. So this, first of all, the story of Gordon Corman, I mean, Phil told me this a long time ago. He wrote a book when he was what?
I think his first book was published when he was like a sophomore in high school. He was like 14 or something.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Maybe freshman. And it's, I mean, we read the series that he started. It's like a series of 7 books.
It's a series of kids. It's about kids in like a boarding school in Canada.
Did he write Ungifted?
Yes.
Okay.
That's like a new one of him.
Yeah,
he's still writing.
He's an extremely prolific writer, like insanely but prolific.
So he's still currently writing, but all of his early stuff is out of print.
Yeah, which we had to track down. That would be a cool thing. It's like editors trying to track this stuff down. And
okay, if you want to read like the best of the best of his, James, if you get a chance, track down "I Want to Go Home" by Gordon Corman. It is the single funniest book you will ever read.
I loved. I have my doubts.
I have my same copy because it's hard to find. And it's just, I'm taped together and stuff. I have probably read it 50 times in my life, no exaggeration, and I still laugh out loud every time I read it.
It's the best movie about, the best book about summer camp.
Ever.
Ever. Like, ever.
Nice. It is not cheap. One of the benefits of doing a podcast is I'm sitting here on various sites.
Yeah, you can check it out.
Yeah.
We may do that sometimes, too.
Yeah, I'm going to check that out. Did you guys ever read My Robot Buddy? Those books?
No.
It was
always looking for more books.
Those are completely out of print too, but they were basically the idea. They were in the 80s, and it was about a future where you could buy a robot who looked exactly like you. The main character gets a robot that looks exactly like him for his birthday, and they basically do kind of a lot of like switching places kind of stuff as jokes, and then it starts getting more serious when somebody's trying to kill him or something. And there was a series about them, and there was like a robot colony on the moon who had rejected the idea that they could be property, and so they were like starting in their own independent colony to be their own thing, and they hated humanity. So when this kid and his buddy ended up there, they had to constantly shift, and they were always kind of threatening the human with checking to see if he was actually a robot by like cutting off his legs and stuff. It was a great book, or a great series. The author's name was Alfred E. Sloat. He wrote a bunch of other books, too. For whatever reason, I just really got into him in the 80s. Like, he came to my school. He was the only author I ever met. And I actually didn't even meet him because I was sick that day. But my teacher got me a signed book from him, and it was, like, the coolest thing I'd ever seen.
I'm writing that one down.
Yeah, so the first book is sort of a little more jokey, and it's kind of it takes a while to kind of get real serious. So the first one, I think, is My Robot Buddy, and then it goes into something called COLAR, COLAR, and it's an acronym. And that was the colony on the moon. And then they had a few others in the series, but those are the two big ones, I think.
I think I was just talking to other people about their experience as a kid with authors. That's why I love the fact that you do, like, a lot of authors, a lot of kid authors seem to be spend, like, every, like, we have another friend who is a young adult author, but they spend a lot of time visiting schools and talking to school kids, because I was lucky, Ray Bradbury came to my high school, so, I mean, yeah.
He came to our public library, and I got to,
I guess stuff. I lucked out with that, hearing some other people never had those kind of experiences, and it was truly, Phil, the same way, it was a life defining experience. When you're that age and when you see an author, especially someone like Bradbury, like talking passionately about things, like it's very, you have so much influence. And I love what you say, like you don't want to break these kids' dreams because like they're at that stage where like anything is possible and I'm gonna write this, I'm gonna do this.
Exactly.
I mean that's gotta be a pretty huge mantle of responsibility sometimes for you.
It is, but they're generally just so excited, and their teachers are so excited to not have to be like worrying about what their class is doing for a half hour or whatever, that they're all into it too. And it's I don't know, I went to this school in Illinois when I was on that tour that was like, oh, so when Suzanne Collins came, when she was just starting out, I was like, wow, I just geeked out a little bit about Hunger Games. And I'm like, I feel like I would feel the same way if one of my favorite authors came. Or if somebody I'd never read, but as a kid, you're just so kind of, you're looking at somebody who's done something. They've done something that you want to do, maybe. Whether or not, you know, they know that my life is actually really fundamentally, you know, empty and everything. But like they, sorry, I'm just kidding. But they kind of see you as author, and so you're important. And so when you use that to be like, oh yeah, you should write if you want. You should do anything creative that you want. You should stick to it and really practice and try hard because you can become whatever you want. Because look at me, I did that same thing. It does feel, it's a bit of a responsibility, but it's also such a like a cool opportunity to do something nice. And I don't get that a lot, or at least I don't choose to do it a lot. So yeah. So the school visits are a lot of fun, and they really are kind of completely energizing because the kids are just so excited. And it's cool because you do get, you're spreading the word about your book, but you're also just getting so excited to like actually see people who might have read it. And if it's just like, if anyone has possibly read it, it's the greatest feeling in the world.
Well, hopefully some of our listeners have. I don't know. I don't know how many read the books that we recommend, but I know a few of them do.
I told my mom that we read like young adult and kid books, and she sent me for my birthday. Like, I don't think she understood what I meant because she sent me copies of. She sent me Dr. Seuss books and then Marmaduke. I have two Marmaduke books.
Marmaduke,
which we actually ended up creating a new segment on our show called Phil Reads a Marmaduke Comic.
Let me tell you, those are some good comics there.
They're the worst comics I've ever read in my life.
There's a comedian who does a segment, and I don't want to mention it in case there are like people who shouldn't be watching this comedian, but he talks about Clifford being just, all he is a big dog, and and there are like 25 books about Clifford being a big dog, whereas there are like five books or seven books in Narnia where there's like an entire revolution or whatever. I don't remember
how many. Clifford's just still a big dog. It's true.
And he's just, Clifford's just a big dog, and that's all that he is.
Yeah, it's just like Marmaduke, just a big dog.
Yep.
He's a big dog that jumps on people, and he's a dog.
He eats a lot. Yeah, it's bad. Well, it's been so fun, though, doing this series where, you know, we read all these books, stuff that we read as kids, or maybe that we missed out on as kids.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much cool literature out there that's, I think people miss, you know, you get old and you have to read adult books. And, you know, you mentioned Nick Hornby, and I'm a huge Nick Hornby fan. And I read books that are targeted at adults, too. But I think people miss out a lot, especially rereading things that I read as kids that I can appreciate more as an adult.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
I tend to see kids' books as sort of being for any age, or at least the ones that I've always liked. Like, there are certainly kids' books that are really designed just for kids. And then you get kind of the books that are sort of just appropriate for any age, and they tend to star kids, but they're almost written as if it's just, this could be anybody. And that's the kind of stuff that I really love, because you can get into things, I think I may have talked about this last time, where it's just like, you don't have to have the same cynicism you do when you're writing a lot of adult material, or just maybe it's a lot of the adult books that I read, but there's just sort of a practicality that's there, unless you're getting into more genre stuff. But I don't know, it's kids books have a little bit more of, I don't know if it's an innocence to them or just sort of an optimism or something that really appeals to me, and you can kind of do whatever you want, and you can kind of deal with big topics without dealing with them cynically and ironically.
I love the way some, like, especially Judy Blume and Beverly Cleary, like, the way they deal with serious things. And it's not like, they don't sugarcoat it, but they also, it's not just full of, I guess, cynicism is how you, I mean, that's the best. And it's like a realistic approach. And I love that. And I love it because I think that's the thing that connected me to a lot of those authors, is that they didn't talk down to you.
Yes.
But they also didn't talk like an adult. Like, I don't know. Like, it was kind of this mix.
Yeah.
And I love that about those books. I love that about your books. And
oh, thanks.
I think you're doing a great job.
I write my books for me anyway, so it's like, if kids like them, then I don't. But that's exactly what I mean. Like, the characters are 12 in the books, but the characters are really me. I mean, that sounds weird, but it's but it's true. Like, if I didn't mention their age, a lot of and they're in like they're in school and everything. But other than that, like, they're sort of living universal kind of lives, for something that you could identify with at any age to a certain extent, or at least whether you have the memory of having gone through this, like Jack and Half Upon a Time, where you just sort of feel out of sorts with what everyone wants you to be, and you're just not comfortable with that, and you don't know what you want, but you know it's not this. Like, that's something that I feel all the time. I mean, not since I discovered writing, but like there are things that we all kind of go through, and just that I feel like a lot of kids' books will deal with that kind of universal. I mean, you have coming of age books, you have things that we can sort of look at as having done, we can look at as I'm coming of age again in a lot of ways, I'm choosing a different life. I mean, there's so much more universal in a lot of ways. So I don't know, I love writing them, and you can be much more imaginative. It doesn't mean I still have ideas for adult books, for sort of a older YA kind of stuff, which I think would be fun too. Anything where I can swear would be great.
Is that something that, like, are you working on that concurrently, or is that something like once this is done or somewhere down the road? Like,
yeah, there's a definite chance that I'm sort of writing something right now. But I'm also sort of writing Story Thieves 3. I'm not sort of writing. I am writing Story Thieves 3. So it's, yeah. I'm playing with an idea for a YA, like an older YA thing.
Interesting.
So nice. We'll see. My agent liked it in spite of himself. That's how he put it. Because it kind of deals with it deals with a lot of stuff that feels kind of played out, but hopefully in an interesting new way. And that's something I kind of like doing. Like, I feel like if an idea truly was like out of steam, well, I don't feel like there are any ideas that are truly out of steam. They're like,
I think you proved that with Half Upon a Time, because like we talked about in the first one, right now, especially in Hollywood, we're bombarded with fairy tales and all that stuff. It seems to be, according to Hollywood, that's played out, but like you kind of put this whole
totally
new
different
twist on it. So
thing,
I think you prove that there isn't, I don't think there is such thing as that. So I'm looking forward to your vampire novel series.
Yes, definitely. Got some zombie things coming down anytime soon.
Yeah, we're not gonna talk
I'm
about
reading
it.
A zombie anthology right now. It's actually really good.
Huh.
It's cool to see some other, like, it's not all just straight up zombie stories, and that, again, it's proof that there, if you're intelligent enough, you can do something with anything. Like, I just read one where it was a short story, because it's an anthology of short stories, and one of them was where the zombie, instead of turning into a zombie, you turn into a super beautiful person, but with it, like, you are a zombie. So, but people are willing to become a zombie because they're like, they want to look beautiful. And what does that look like? And what happens? And it was pretty cool.
That's scary. Wow. No, I just went to like, how cool. Anyway. Yeah. That's one of those things where it's like zombie, like all the kind of classic horror tropes have such an easy metaphor that you can kind of get back to and take another approach at. So it's like, mm-hmm. And then there's the stuff that I really love too, which is like you get into all the different variations and you really explore those. So like you embrace the genre. So like Walking Dead kind of thing where it's like, you blow it out instead of like going back and reimagining it, you show how much you've enjoyed it and read about it and just kind of pull everything together, I guess. And so I think there are benefits to both, and I think both can be a lot of fun. Like Ready Player One is that way in a lot of ways. Like it's it's a new story certainly, but it's a new story about everything that he loved, and it's right. For that reason, and it embraces that, and it's just kind of amazing because of that.
I love that book. I'm so excited for his next book.
Yeah, it's really cool.
It's called Armada. It sounds awesome.
It's like a month from now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really soon. People have been posting about it because he's given out some reader copies.
Ooh.
Will Wheaton's doing the audiobook again.
Is he?
Which, I don't know if you're familiar. He did the audiobook for Ready Player One. I actually bought it again just because I had already read the book. I own the book. But I'm like, I gotta listen. And it was really great. It was especially entertaining when he referenced himself.
Right.
So
he's... Oh, that's so cool.
I don't know. I love books. What are you reading right now? Or what's the last thing you read?
No, I there are some books that I'm reading that I don't want to say because I'm reading them for the YA idea. So
Ooh.
It would
it would give it away.
No, it's stupid, but it would be a little embarrassing after what you guys were just saying about zombies and vampires. So
gotcha.
I'm gonna.
That's okay.
I'm,
it's okay.
No, I'm reading one of the benefits that I do get is that I can ask my editor for arcs. So I'm reading a book called, and now I'm blanking on it, Blackthorn's Key, which is coming out from my same editor this fall. And it's actually a lot of fun. It's kind of like a Harry Potter type book, but with alchemy instead of magic. And so this orphan becomes apprenticed to an alchemist, and then all the alchemists in the city start getting murdered. So it becomes very, it's just a lot of fun so far. Like I'm halfway through, it's a big book for them. So it's, she always is pretty upfront with me about whether something's like, a big marketable book or if this is actually really good. She's like, this is a good book. So, and I've been enjoying that one. The author's name is Kevin Sands, S-A-N-D-S, I think. So that's good. I have such a huge pile of stuff because every time I hear somebody recommend a book, I pick it up and it just ends up in a pile next to me. It's a nightmare. Which is why I end up reading so many comics, because you can kind of read those in such a small period of time that you don't have to devote the entire the length of time it would take to read a book. And so I'm halfway through like 20 different books too, and there are bookmarks throughout my entire bookshelf, just sticking out of books. Like, I really want to read... I never finished S. Like, I got halfway through and I was like, I love this book. And then it was just... Yeah.
That same here. I haven't finished it yet.
you attack it in different ways.
I started off... I actually switched up how I was reading it halfway through my reading, because I was reading it all at once. Mm. So then I'm like, this is not working. Now I read... First, I read the actual book, then I read the other stuff, like the notes and the margin stuff. So I do it by chapter. I had to switch it up.
It's a nightmare if you're trying to do it, but it's so cool too. And it's like you have to devote like a week to doing nothing but reading that book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's why it's sitting right here, because I'm going to do it.
Right there.
It's the same. I didn't get through House of Leaves either, even though I really loved it. Like,
see, I powered through that just because I had to know what happened, because I was terrified, like, at the beginning of that book. Just the idea of, like, just that idea of, like, a door to what you don't, to you, who knows what, opening up in your house was, I don't know, the way he described it, and then what was going on in the footnote story as well.
Oh, yeah.
At some point, I was so freaked out that I tell this story a lot, but I actually... I locked myself in, not just in my house, but in my room. I locked the bedroom door. I was so freaked out.
But you felt safe, and that's what's important.
Yeah.
That's right.
In my little cave. I don't know. There's been times where... I mean, we sometimes freak ourselves out because we record so late at night. And I think sometimes we've had some moments where we get really freaked out.
This place we're recording in right now has a lot of house sounds.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know.
Anyone...
Sometimes we'll talk... Yeah, we just start talking about stuff, and...
You just... Yeah, wouldn't it be scary if... And then you're like, oh, crap. It's happening. Yeah.
And then, like, when Phil leaves, I'm just here by myself.
Yeah,
and then it's like, all right, I guess I'm sleeping with the lights on tonight, or... I guess I'm gonna have to watch, like, a bunch of happy things to get me, like... I'm gonna watch Bob's Burgers for an hour before I...
Oh, see, that doesn't work. I will get up in the middle of the night and, like, run to the bathroom, and I'm like, don't look in the mirror, don't look in the mirror, don't look in the mirror. Just because anything, like, every horror movie that I've ever heard about having somebody appear in the mirror behind you. And it's stupid.
I have thoughts like that, like, all the time. Like, last night, I just was like, I'm like, what if somebody just walked in here? Like, what if it was like, what if somebody just walked into the room right now? And I'm, like, in bed, and these are the thoughts that I'm having.
Why would someone just walk
in? But I'm like, but that's terrifying. Like, what if, or like, what if... Like, I mean, but that's how this works, right? Like, they, like, The Grudge or something. Like, they just come out of, like, whatever.
Guys, I don't mean to scare you, but don't look behind you right now. There's something.
He can see. He's looking.
Yeah.
See, that's something. I once had an idea, because one time, I still have an idea, like, somewhere gestating. Because one time I was recording, Phil was on one end, I was on the other, and I left. And then I'm like, what if while I was gone, Phil saw somebody, like, come sneak into my house or something while I was away from the camera? And then what if he couldn't? What if my microphone wasn't working? Like, how would you tell me? Like, and I was just thinking about that, and I was like, I freaked myself out pretty bad.
Did you hear about that thing in New Jersey where the couple or the family had to move out of the house?
No.
No.
You could probably Google it. It's called The Watcher. There was this guy who basically, somebody sent this family who just moved into a house letters about how he's been watching this house and he knows, like, who they are, and thank you for bringing new young blood, because they had kids. Like, thank you for bringing it.
Gosh.
And he's like, you will find out what's going to happen soon. And it was basically a horror movie come to life, and they moved out.
Crap.
And the family, the family that sold
it. Real.
The family that sold them the house knew about it too. And it's look it up, because the message.
Oh, I gotta look this up, because I read there is.
Oh my god!
Are you familiar with with the No Sleep subreddit?
Oh no.
Well, it's basically the subreddit of stories that are presented as true, but they're fictional horror stories, but they're presented as real.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's actually spawned a lot of cool, like, because a lot of people think, like, this Spawn series, people have published things. So one of them, it's, oh, crap, now I forgot what it was called.
Is that the Slim Man? Slender Man was
one of the things that came, but it's, like, stuff like that. But, like, there was one, ah, crap, I bought the Kindle book. I think it's called, like, Balloons or, oh, crap. But it sounds a lot like The Watcher that you're telling, but it was a fictional, but it was basically, like, this kid, you know, like, in class, it was a class project where they send off balloons with, like, a little letter, and everybody gets, like, a letter back, and like, oh, yeah, hey, I got your balloon, and all he gets back is a picture, and it's, like, blurry, but he keeps getting pictures from his house, and then it turns out that, like, there's this guy stalking him, and it's, it gets really crazy, and something like that. But it just reminded me of that. See, it's scary stuff. It's fun.
And it happens in real life.
That's why the window's closed behind us, because I'm scared of windows being open at night. I've told this story on our show before, but had an incident where someone at camp freaked us out by popping a ghost face up in a window.
Oh, yeah.
Still can't have the window open at night.
Nope. I am right with you. So. The idea that you would look outside, and right now I forgot to turn on the lights in my room, so I'm looking out a black window, and just like there's somebody's face right there.
Just a face, it's terrifying to me.
It's the only time I've ever scared Phil.
Was
messing with that.
Messing with the window thing,
Oh, see.
Because Phil doesn't get scared usually, and that's windows. The only time.
And that... That window's dangerous back there.
It is. Now I'm going to be looking at it the whole time.
I've been staring at it, waiting, because you can kind of see shadows, and I'm just waiting for it to open.
What if it starts... Yeah, if it starts opening right now, the interview's over. So just be ready. I'm done. I'm out.
That would be me in every horror movie. That's why there's not going to be a horror version of Story Thieves. I'm not writing that.
That's what I was about to ask. Are you going to start playing... Like, what other genres can we expect from...
So, book 3 is going to be superheroes, which isn't quite a genre, but I wanted to do it. So book 4 was going to be time travel, which also is not really, but I thought that would be a ton of fun to do because of the sort of inherent difficulties with it, with paradoxes and just all the kind of fun, just minutiae of time travel. I thought that would really fit the series, but now I'm thinking Choose Your Own Adventure might fit it even better. If I can get away with that.
That's really, really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to figure out...
Brian Apodaca, speaking of paradoxes, Brian Apodaca, while he was up here, showed me... Have you seen the paradox cut of the Terminator Genesis trailer?
No.
Somebody... It's like a joke thing, but somebody basically re-edited the Genesis trailer, and the punchline is, like, there's just, like, 8 million, like, 8 Terminators, different versions, and it does... Because, like, Terminator, like, when you really start thinking about it, it doesn't make any sense.
No.
And this just kind of plays off of that. Like, there's a part where, like, he's like, get to the chopper, and there's like 4 Terminators hanging on, because, like, he's like, I sent the Terminator to get that Terminator, and then there's another Terminator, but I had to go back, because if I didn't go back, I wouldn't be born. Because again, like, I remember as a kid, even as a 10-year-old, like, I remember we watched Terminator 2, and I was like, Dad, I remember leaving the theater. I'm like, Dad, if they end Judgment Day, that means John Connor doesn't get born because Kyle Reese is his dad. And if there's no Judgment Day, he doesn't send Kyle Reese back. So shouldn't John Connor disappear, like, back to the future? But my dad was like, it's just a movie, Brendan. Just chill out. But I'm like, it doesn't make sense.
I feel like if you have one timeline where it happens without being interfered with, then you can go back and switch it. But as long as you have that first one, and that's what I had that problem with Lost when they started doing their time travel stuff. Did you guys watch Lost?
Yeah.
It got pretty confusing.
It's just, it stopped sort of making sense because there wasn't like an original timeline where things would have happened to get to the same place to get them to go back. You know, it's hard to explain, but it's kind of like the example of John Connor. John Connor would have had to be born some way the first time. Maybe when Kyle comes back, it's a different father now, so he's changed, but there had to be a John Connor the first time, or else you've got this loop that doesn't exist. But if there was, then that sort of, you can kind of go with that and say, well,
that's why About Time is amazing, because they address
that.
I thought you watched it.
A good movie.
Wait, which one is that?
The one with, you watched it with Rachel McAdams and
because
they basically, there's a set point, because if you do go back, then it's like a totally different kid, and like when it was amazing. When I was like, "Holy crap!" The fact that like this romantic comedy quotation marks
figured it out, better.
Figured this out, like, is pretty nuts.
I was going to say the first two, but really the first Terminator movie sort of, well, no, you're right. Forget it. I take it all back.
I'm serious. Terminator, when you really start thinking about it, just starts, and this trailer really, that's kind of the whole point. But, I mean, I love Terminator.
Yeah. Well, time travel stuff is
time
fun.
Time travel stuff in general, because, when you start, that's why I love Back to the Future 2, because for, as a kid, that was kind of what opened my eyes to, this can go south really quickly when you start, messing with...
Well, that's another example, too. It's similar to, the book thing. That movie, for me, watching him go back into the first movie and interacting with himself. Yeah. And the character, that just blew my mind that you could do that in a movie.
Oh, yeah.
So...
That's that kind of thing. But also, they really nailed the... I feel like they did the time travel thing correctly. Mm-hmm. Everything happens, then he changes it in the past, so it's all different in the future. None of it was required, that he be back there until this second timeline, right, kind of thing. Makes sense, sort of.
Makes complete sense, and it works. And that's and also the fact that they were able to, perfectly... Because I remember as a kid, I appreciated it on a certain level, but then as an adult, when I went back and, I've got the Blu-rays and I'm going through it, and, the fact that they, were able... Because I remember at some point I realized, I'm like, wait a minute, they filmed Back to the Future 2, 5 years mm-hmm. after. Yeah. And it was, three or four years after, because I guess it came out in 89, so...
Yeah.
And so it would have been, 3 or 4 years. So I'm like, so they went back and recreated, how do you do that, without, and it looks like it's the same, it's continuous. Mm-hmm. You watch one, I've seen, there's YouTube videos where they're,
side by side.
Side by side. They perfectly, and that must have been insane to do. Things that, people probably wouldn't even notice that they actually took the time to, and also the fact that they didn't have Crispin Glover for any of two, and they still made it work.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, that's actually kind of it was a monumental thing, actually, where he actually, I think in two, they used him in a couple things, and he sued them for it.
Right, for the old footage.
Because first he wouldn't do two because he was doing something. I think it was money, and he was doing something else. And so they basically use some old footage,
him is another actor.
But old him is another actor, and some of the scenes when he goes to Back to the 50s, some of the scenes. But because they used his old footage and they tried to claim fair use, he took him to it went to the Supreme Court, and Crispin Glover won. Huh. And a lot of the sampling and a lot of that stuff. A lot of the decisions have spurned from that
Crispin Glover
decision.
Paramount.
It was a pretty monumental
thing. So you may want to pay attention to this for your upcoming adaptations here.
Seriously. Wow.
Because he actually won, and they had to pay him a lot of money for using his likeness.
So we interrupted the flow here.
Sorry, we're going all over the place.
You said a possible Choose Your Own Adventure one.
Oh, yeah.
Which I love. Love
so
the
that,
idea.
That would be book four, and then book five would sort of be wrapping everything up, so it wouldn't be sort of its own genre, because things will be happening in book four.
Gotcha.
Nice. They will sort of necessitate a lack of genre. But... I thought that'd be fun. I thought there are all kinds of other genres I'd love to get into. Romance doesn't exactly fit. Western, no one's going to really care about. I'd love to do just a straight comedy book, but that doesn't really fit. And I kind of incorporated sci-fi and fantasy both into the first one. Right. Time travel would have sort of been, I don't know. It's basically kind of whatever seems fun and whatever fits the story at the time. The mystery one fit really well because of her missing father. And it just seemed like the natural progression of once she's been looking all along, and I'm trying not to give things away. she has access to magic because Kiel is back in the second book, but things don't really go as she would have imagined when she actually uses a location spell to find her father. So that leads her into maybe going into looking into detectives. So we'll see.
Gotcha. So Kiel, I also, how much of Kiel, is inspired by Harry Potter? Or, is this... is this your reference to Harry Potter?
It's definitely, I tried to incorporate every sort of cliche that I could into Kiel, but I also made him into this weirdly optimistic, arrogant, but not in a jerky kind of... I don't know, I thought he was going to be kind of another Philip, and he turned out to be really charming. And I don't know if it was to me. And so I really kind of started liking him, which meant in the second
I really book, liked him, too. I liked that whole universe. Like, I want to read those books now. Like, I want to read those? The actual Keel books. Because at first I was like, oh, this is just his version of Harry Potter. But then when they actually go into the world and you start learning about the story, I'm like, whoa, this is a really deep, intense story.
I actually, to answer one of your earlier questions about, like, how much planning I did write synopses for 7 Keel Gnomonfoot books. So I know, like...
Oh, man.
Whoa.
Each book, they go to find a different key, and they had to find it in a different way, so it goes back and forth between science and magic. But what they found out was they had to usually use science to find a magic key and vice versa. So I had to plan all those out, and I planned, like, what each of the reveals would be in each book. So one of them, he finds out he's a clone of Dr. Verity, and one of them, I forget all of them now, but... That was so much fun just to do. To, like, plan a Harry Potter series as if it existed, but I'm just kind of referencing it and showing a few scenes here or there and, like, coming up with characters. And, yeah, that was fun.
So would you ever actually write those?
I think that would be... It would sort of be fun to write them, but I don't know that I'd be able to do it that well. I'm not actually that good at... Like, one of the things that I know I'm not as good at is world building. Especially, like... You look at somebody like Brandon Moles. Have you guys read Beyonders?
I haven't read him, but ever since we saw him, it's on my list.
It's on our book club list. Coming up here. We have a schedule.
Beyonders is amazing, and it has sort of a kind of a little more silly way that they get into it. The main character falls into the mouth of a hippopotamus. But, like, and that's kind of the only... silly part of the books. As soon as you get into this fantasy world, it's just the most detailed world, and it's got, like, just such a ranging history of different races and how they treat each other and why there's sort of, like, unbalances between some and hatred of others, and it's so amazing. And I don't have that skill where I can build worlds. I don't know why. I don't know if I don't have the sort of patience to kind of go through and map it all out. But, like, a synopsis of 7 books was right up my alley, actually writing them. I don't know. Because it was kind of like William Goldman writing The Princess Bride. I got to do all the good parts and not have to worry about
it. We just talked about that on our... Yeah. That was our most recent book club book. We read that and Silent Gondoliers.
Oh, what's that?
Oh.
Ooh. Ooh. It's kind of an unofficial sequel follow-up to The Princess Bride. It's the closest thing
to a sequel you're ever going to get. Except it's not at all. It's another Morgenstern book. Yeah, it is.
It's written as if Morgenstern read The Princess Bride and was mad that he acted like he's not still writing books. So here's his recent book.
That's amazing.
And it's about...
Oh, it's incredible.
It's about... Basically, it's this fictional world where the gondoliers in Venice no longer sing. And he tells you the reason why.
Yeah.
And it's really amazing.
It's really good.
And it's got all the parentheticals and all that stuff. Yeah.
It's a lot shorter. It's a quick read.
It's a quick read.
All right,
I would definitely recommend.
I'm just ordering it as we speak. So
yes. Oh, dude. Yes. I'm so glad to hear you like The Princess Bride. William Goldman's my other one of my all-time favorite authors, and I've read every single book that he has written.
We've spent a lot of time discussing because. There's an element with Goldman where you're like, I think this is what's going on, but with Goldman you never know. Like, I still think there's a small chance that, like, either after he dies or right before he dies, like, there's gonna just be this, like, there's gonna be some, like, things that get dropped, like, here's Buttercup's baby, here's this, here's this other thing, like... And I think he's going to do it just to mess with people.
I don't think he ever really even meant to write Buttercup's Baby.
Oh, I'm 99% sure that, like, even the Buttercup's Baby chapter that's in the anniversary edition is just to mess with people.
Yeah.
Like, but completely to mess with people. But it's so good, and you want to know what happens. Yep. And it's nuts. And, like, and it's just, it's always funny. Phil and I have talked about this a lot, but one of our favorite pastimes, if you're really bored, is just to read people's Goodreads reviews and other just comments about, like, Goldman stuff. About Princess Bride in particular, because some people just don't get it.
Really?
Oh, yeah. That's... They're like, oh, this...
Like, his intro, people are like, why is he so insulting
Seems
to
like
his
he's
son?
Kind of jerk.
He's
why
such a jerk. And I'm like, none of this is true.
It's not a real
like,
thing.
None of the, he doesn't have a son. Like, that's, like, when you actually, like, if you go to the level where you realize, like, nothing, you can't take anything that he says. But, like, a lot of people are just like, this is so messed up. Or, like, why would he cut out all these things in Princess Bride? Like, how could he do this? Like,
no, leave the original thing intact.
People think Morgenstern's real. People think Florin is real. Like...
Wait, what? Florin's not? No,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's true.
I love that.
I'm dead serious. Like, because, I mean, like, it's like reading the comments on something like what was another one? Like, the comments
the
on,
Onion
like,
or something.
Like, on Onion articles or Burning Love. Like, I remember you pointed me to the Burning Love Yahoo comments.
Yep.
Which, it's a fictional dating show.
I spend way too much time reading comments that people write about other stuff. But
when it's my favorite thing is like things that you know are satire or fake and people treat
and
it as
just
real.
Don't
and
get just it.
The way, the direction, like the level that they will, the vitriol, it's nuts.
The passion, you know?
James, have you read other William Goldman stuff or just The Princess Bride?
I'd read his nonfiction. Like, because I, when I was...
Okay, yeah.
I was looking into...
Oh, the screenplay book, the screenwriting books are...
Those were kind of a... Those were both really amazing. I haven't read his actual fiction stuff.
It's really good.
It's like, I was just looking at that. The Color of Light?
Yeah, all of them are good. I think that's actually part of a... I think that's part two in a kind of sort of series.
Oh, really?
Magic is really good.
Here's the thing. The Princess Bride is definitely the one he wrote most towards a younger audience.
Yeah.
The rest of it's very much like adult fiction. But it's, if you like that, it's all really good.
Magic is good.
Marathon Man is one of my favorites.
Hmm?
Marathon Man is great.
We're talking about scary stuff. Magic, if you're,
magic is very
if you're,
scary.
If you're scared of puppets, you'll be really scared of
it. Oh,
also,
no,
the movie, if you haven't seen the movie. But
yeah, I can't. After Poltergeist, when I was like 5, I can't do puppets. And you'll
don't read Magic because it's the ultimate.
Yeah.
You'll see one of my darkest fears at the end of Story Thieves 2. It's just blatant nightmare. Like, just straight out of my... Yeah, you'll see. Somebody
for me,
gets
puppets,
terrorized.
I'm a big... And for me, it's like any inanimate object that can come to life. It's like so, like, puppets, especially dolls, mannequins.
Anything with eyes.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, that doesn't bug me as much.
Like you mentioned Poltergeist. For me, I'm telling you, like, this was it. Like, my grandparents lived on a farm. They had a basement, which I grew up in California, so basements to me were like fascinating. And one of the rooms, it was like, because my parents, I mean, my dad and like my aunts and uncles never lived there as kids, but they kind of set up like the kids' rooms in the basement, which I guess is kind of weird, even though they never actually lived there as kids.
Right.
And so one of them was, like, my aunt's room, and there were Peanuts books down there. Like, she had every Peanuts book. She has ones from, like, the first Peanuts book. Like,
right.
That's cool.
And so they're really valuable, and, like, but I would go down there and grab them and read them, and... But it was always this huge ordeal, because there was a bed, and sitting on the bed, I kid you not, were, like, 4 or 5 life-size dolls.
Ah.
And going down in that basement in the dark and seeing those dolls...
Past the dolls to get to the Peanuts?
Was like... I got to this routine where I got to where I could... I convinced my grandparents to move the shelf all the way to the door so I could literally reach around without having to look into the room. And I would just grab... I would start grabbing Peanuts books. I'm like, okay, I haven't read this one. I've read that one, so I'll put that... But without even looking into the room, I just start fumbling around.
It's more scary because you don't know what's happening there.
Yeah.
I didn't want to know.
What if you felt something on your hand?
Yeah, what if it's walking towards you and you're not looking at it?
I don't know. I guess I wasn't thinking that far ahead, but it was... But, like, just those dolls. Like, the idea of those dolls coming to life.
Don't
was...
start with Magic, then, but maybe Marathon Man after you're done with... I just want to have some of the books I recommend on your little pile that you say keep stacking up near you, that's all.
Oh, I'm happy to take... I had never read Half Magic, and I picked that up as soon as after you guys mentioned it.
Oh,
and
really?
I loved it. Yeah.
Did you read the whole series or just the first one?
I got the box set, and I only read the first one, but I liked it enough to be like, oh, I'm probably going to go.
So good. Like, as good as that first one is, like, again, when you get to the point where they go back into the first
book. Yeah, you got to get to the end of the series.
Just all this other stuff, because all this other stuff that they do,
Don't spoil it.
I'm not going to spoil it. It's so good. And the characters, and the fact that it was written like the, what was that? It was like the
50s, I want to say.
Well, and then, like, because he was influenced, because, again, like, you see these generations of influence, because his influence was Nesbitt.
Right.
Which you just read one of those.
And that's great stuff.
I've never read Nesbitt.
E. Nesbitt?
Was it a she?
I believe it was a she.
And because I found out about E. Nesbitt because Tolkien talked about Nesbitt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Tolkien was influenced by Nesbitt. J.K. Rowling talks about her a lot.
Yeah, good stuff. Five Children and It, The Enchanted Castle.
Did we talk? I feel like I looked this up recently. Did you guys talk about this last time? Maybe. Probably.
Probably because we just read the Half Magic series.
Yeah.
So we probably did talk about.
Oh, that. He references her, doesn't he?
Yeah.
That's why I looked her up, because I must have seen that, or we, one of the two, because I remember this.
Maybe both.
Yeah.
I'm looking at these books and I'm like, I recognize these, but I've never read them.
And then the other crazy thing, when you really start getting into it, Nesbitt was of the same time period as Lovecraft. So, like, you're talking, like, and there's some funky stuff going on there, like, with those genres, like, and it kind of goes into this, you start going into those deep dives.
Just read a lot of books.
Just read a lot of books.
You wind up reading a lot.
There was an annotated Lovecraft that just, I think it just came out, or I just heard about it, that sounded really fascinating. Because that's something, I don't know anything about his life or anything, and I've heard some weird stories, and I'm like...
There's a lot of weird stuff, and it's also how influential he is and was, and...
Oh, yeah.
Because I found out about him because I was a 13-year-old obsessed with Stephen King.
Oh, sure.
And so he talked about Lovecraft a lot, and then starting to read it, I was like, oh, this is... can see where a lot of it comes from.
Did you ever read Stephen King's book on horror? Probably.
Dance Macabre?
Yes.
I wish he would write another nonfiction book, because Dance Macabre is amazing. Like, Phil, you should read that. And then On Writing is
I love reading amazing. Books about writing.
Yeah, they're both good.
Bradbury's is also...
They're both really, really good books. Like, I would say anybody that wants to write... or even read, should read both of those, the Dance Macabre and then On Writing. On Writing especially, because part of me, for me, it was like this, because for a long time this is somebody that I've been following since I was 13, and he had that near-death experience, and like, and for me, On Writing was my assurance that he was okay, because like, because at first I'm like, man, what's going to happen? Because he was like, at one point he was like, I'm never going to write again. And then he managed to, like, he's like, well, like, I'm writing is kind of who I am. I can't not do that.
Hmm.
So he had to figure out a way.
And so he wrote On Writing.
Yeah, that was one of the things he wrote, like, immediately after the accident. Hmm. And then, because then speaking of meta, it gets crazy, because then he wrote the accident into the whole Dark Tower universe. And that thing's got nuts. Like, and I love it. I love it. A lot of people don't like that whole, like, his whole... He wrote himself into the Dark Tower, right. And then the reason, like, it goes into the whole, like, the accident, and they have to save it. Like, it gets really super meta, but I'm all about it.
I love that kind of stuff.
I love that stuff, but yeah. Cool. Well, I think we've taken up enough of your time.
Is there anything else you
want to
hit on?
No. I think that kind of covers it. I'm really excited for everybody to see the next book, just because of this, the kind of, apart from any of the writing, because it's terrible, but, like, the fun stuff that we got to do, like, just, I still can't believe they're actually drawings in Story Thieves 2. I don't know why that's, like, such a big thing for me, but when you see them, when you see the context, you'll see why it's so much fun.
And that's coming out in January?
Yeah, it won't be out till January, but hopefully there'll be I love the fact that it'll be like a year after I finish writing it. But there will be hopefully like a Half Upon a Time thing in between. Trying to figure out how long that's going to be before I kind of jump into it. And there's so many different places where I could have the Story Thieves people jump into Half Upon a Time, the series. It's one of those things where I don't want to spoil it if people haven't read Half Upon a Time. But I also want to give... I want to give something to those fans who also, like, are looking for something else to... I don't know. There's a rumor that there's something that I mentioned a few times about invisible gnomes and maybe stealing Philip's pants, and I kind of want to have that scene be told in the crossover, because that sounds like a lot of fun to me. But I don't know how appropriate that is if I have people stealing other people's pants. But it did happen in canon, so darn it, I'm gonna write it. I don't know.
That's right.
Yeah.
Keep us posted, like, when this comes out, when you do that, because we'll tell people to read it. We'll send them your way.
Oh, sure. Thanks.
And then your website is jamesrileyauthor.com?
I think so. That's how often I go.
Sounds right.
Yeah, it sounds right.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Thanks. And you're on Twitter and all that?
Yeah. Twitter is like _JamesRiley_, because there's a soccer player who's much more popular than I am. He's been trending, so that's, you know, that it's not me.
Well, that's good for you though, right? You get a little bleed over from that.
Oh yeah, somebody was like, I saw good. James Riley was trending, and then it was a soccer player, so I got really disappointed. That's how I found out about it. You and me both, fan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I love doing this.
Yeah. Thanks for coming back on the show. Really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. I'm glad to be your second person.
Well, yeah, and, you know, if you want to be the third, maybe after the next one comes out, we'll have you back again.
Sure, yeah, let me know. I'm happy to do it. It's a lot of fun. I'll just keep getting book recommendations from you guys, and it'll all be equal.
That's good. Well, that's the way we can get the book report back from you to make sure you actually read the stuff we recommend.
Oh, crap. That'll be good. It's going to be an assignment.
No, you did good. You got half.
I know. I'm impressed. Exactly. See, I live up to it.
That's good. And you ordered, on the show, you ordered a copy of Silent Gondolier, so...
I also realized I didn't have Princess Bride, so I also ordered that.
Oh, that's good. I just, for Father's Day, my kids and my wife got the illustrated, like, super fancy version. So
ooh, that's cool.
Pretty excited about that, yeah.
Are you going to get the...
good maps.
There's an illustrated Harry Potter version coming out soon, right?
I heard about it. Oh, well, the big news today... You heard the big news today,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, she's doing a play.
She's doing a play, but it's going to be a new...
In the Harry
it's
Potter
in
universe.
The universe.
Yeah.
And people are... It's. I did have a little bit of entertainment reading some of the hardcore Harry... Because, like, people... Harry Potter fans in the U.S. and other countries are going crazy. Because, as far as we know, and it could only come out in England. Like, that's kind of up to the theater people.
Right.
Like, it could... Because there's certain... like. Did you know there's a Lord of the Rings musical that, like, never came out here?
What?
No.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to...
My friend
Doom.
Went
We're
to London to go... I have a friend who's a hardcore Tolkien fanatic, and he went... And it's actually... He played the music for... It's really good.
Huh.
But it never came out here.
Precious, my precious. I think I've heard that, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, we already have kind of a musical version of Rankin and Bass, yeah. Like, and all the Rankin, yeah, like that stuff, like
the greatest
adventure. but yeah, so like I think a lot of Harry Potter fans are freaking out right now, and so but that's exciting, and somebody actually made a guide to like all the new stuff that she has released on the Pottermore website. Mm-hmm. So I've been kind of going through that because there's a lot more than just the... Because, like, she wrote kind of a little mini thing on, like, it was, like, a daily prophet from, like, 20 years from now. And, like, what's going on in the Harry Potter universe, which was really cool. But apparently there was a lot more stuff that she did on that site, so I was going through some of it.
Well, that's all exciting.
Yeah.
Just let James go to bed.
Let him go.
He is 3 hours later than us, to be fair. So
that's true. And my bedtime usually is right at 9:50. So
okay, that's perfect. Perfect timing. Well, thank you again so much for coming on. Thank you, listeners, for listening. We're gonna do more author interviews. We'll have Lisa Graff come back on again.
Yeah, she's got a new book out.
New books with her, so it's very exciting. Have you read Lisa Graff, James?
I haven't. I'm just writing down these
another.
G-R-A-F-F.
She what was the one that we read that was really good? Tangle of Knots.
A Tangle of Knots is
oh yeah
super
yeah.
Cool.
I know no author names. It's always titles. Okay.
Yeah, she actually went to school with Phil.
Yeah, that's
Phil
how we kind of got in touch with her.
Nice.
We were in the same creative writing club together. She's published a book, and I've got a bunch of stuff on my computer. I'll look at that. So.
Hey.
That's where we're at.
That's all of us.
And then she actually, the other book that we read of hers is called Umbrella Summer, and it takes place in a fictional version of Phil's hometown of Big Bear, California.
Oh, that's so
really,
cool.
Really and it's good. Really good. And then, so then her newest book is another book that takes place in that universe.
That's awesome.
And it's really good. It's a totally different, I mean, she does a lot of touchy-feely stuff. And
but Tangle of Knots is more
A little bit more fantasy.
Yeah.
But it's, they're all really good. She's good.
Anyway, so
we'll have her back at some point.
And hopefully James will come back again.
And Gordon Corman's the dream, right?
That's my dream, yeah. Well, that and having James come on again. Those are the two dreams. Yeah.
But thank you, James, and we wish you continued kicking butt on those books. And
thank you.
We wish you continued kicking butt.
Yeah, good luck on finishing the series.
Kicking butt is all I need.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Phil, anything?
Final thoughts? Go read The Story Thieves if you haven't so far. It's just Story Thieves. Sorry, no the.
Yeah.
Did I mess that up?
Just Story Thieves. Is that correct?
It is just Story Thieves. And you can you can put it as the. You can say the Batman. They do it sometimes. It's not right. But
that's true. All right.
I blame it's that cartoon that was the Batman.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's just wrong.
And then wasn't there like one title that was the Batman? I don't know. I don't know why they do that.
Well, anyway, Story Thieves. No, go read it, James Riley. It's excellent. And
And you can check out our book club. Go to radiobrendo.com. Click the book club link. If you're on Goodreads, it's Vecchio Book Club.
Yep.
And we don't really post too much in the forums because it's pretty much just me and Phil
in the forums.
If you want to interact with us on there, and also just to see what we're reading, it is the current. Yep. And you can go back and look at past books because we've read a lot.
See the Predane Chronicles in there.
They're not in there, dude. It might have been for you, but when I joined in, you had already read them.
Okay, maybe.
I hadn't. We read The Foundling as a one-off.
All right.
Because The Foundling is a one-off.
All right.
That was one of our one-offs. I am 100% correct.
That's what my mom taught me to say when I don't agree with someone, but I don't want to argue with them. You might be right.
All right. Because you read another series before I joined. You read the, what's the movie with Bill Murray?
Oh, yeah. The Ember.
City of Ember. You read those before I didn't join the club yet.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you, James, again. Radio Brendo is the site for us. Thank you, everybody. So for Radio Brendo Man, I'm Brendan Creasy.
And I'm Phil Vecchio.
Have a good one, everybody.
Go too soon, just leave it alone. This podcast is a part of the Benview Network.
You can find this and other podcasts like it at BenviewNetwork.com.
G'day, I'm Kev McCauley.
And I'm Bev McCauley.
And we run the Dinner Party Small Talk Comedy Podcast.
We got all kinds of comedy.
We got situational comedy.
We got observational comedy.
We got improvisational comedy.
But we don't have puns.
No! If you want puns, then you can rack off.
If you like puns, then you're an idiot.
Wait, I like puns.
Shut up!
So listen in to our new episodes every fortnight. Kind of.
And if you don't like it, then you can get stuffed.
Dinner Party Small Talk.
Where the big issues take a back seat to Dinner Party Small Talk. Yep.
Hello out there in Benview podcast land. My name is Josh, and this is Jesse.
Hello.
And we happen to do a podcast about video games called the Extra Damage Cast.
Indeed we do.
If you like to talk about video games, or more accurately, listen to other people talk about video games, you should check out our podcast. It's at extradamage.com or on the Benview Network website, whatever that is.